Welcome to the Hell of a Catholic podcast. This is Father Josh Allen, the chaplain at the Georgia Tech Catholic Center.
This is Anthony Haskin, a pastoral lackey at the Catholic Center.
And this is Anna Gomez. I'm a fourth year BME.
So Anna, this is your first time on the podcast, correct?
Yes, and since we're talking about tithing, I have to confess I'm only 10% excited about this podcast.
Here we go. The puns begin.
You spoiled the topic. we got to introduce you first.
I'm sorry for stealing the topic from you, Father Josh.
No, that's okay. I'm happy to have somebody else announce the topic, because one of the problems about tithing is people always complain that priests talk too much about money. So you brought it up.
I brought it up. Now I saved you from being
exactly.
The bad guy.
So now I can't be accused of that. Our topic today is, in fact, tithing. And I wanted to just throw a couple things in. I think Anthony's got some stuff prepared for us, but I wanted to throw a couple things in just to start with, and that is that it is a frequent complaint among people in parishes that priests talk about money too much. And I know there are some parishes where money is a subject of homilies very, very frequently. There are other parishes where money is a subject of homilies almost never. And it is indistinguishable from one parish to the next how many people complain that the priest talks too much about money. I mean, it seems like no matter how much the priest talks about money, the same number of people always complain about it. So it's just kind of one of those things. And it's funny, I remember at my old parish, you'd get people that would get really upset about, oh, well, he's talking about money again. And I think to myself, well, that's very interesting. I mean, I hardly ever talked about money. I was the parochial vicar. I didn't have to. You know, if you actually keep track of these things, which, you know, priests, we tend to do this, right? We tend to keep track of how many times we talk about certain things. At least I do. And you look back at the tally, it's like, well, gosh, I didn't mention this very much. Compared to the reality that there's no topic in the Gospels that Jesus talked about more than money. That was his number one topic, was money. So with that, I thought it would be good to throw that out there, and then we'll get your thoughts, and Anthony can tell us what he's learned.
It's funny that you mentioned your old parish. I was actually there a couple weekends ago, and guess what the homily was about?
Was it about money?
It was about money.
Well, was it the beginning of the year still?
Yeah, it was there. It wasn't necessarily about money. It was about their mustard seed mission thing.
Oh, sure.
Getting to that. But I guess for Anna, what do you know about tithing, I guess? Why is it a suggested practice for Catholics to tithe, and what exactly does it mean to
tithe? I don't think
tithe?
It's a suggested practice.
Well, we'll get to that in a second.
Okay. What is? It's one of the five precepts of the Church, right? Mm-hmm. Is to support the Church financially.
So I have printed out here, since I've left my handy copy of the Code of Canon Law at home, is canon law.
There will come a time in your life where you will not say that. You'll be like, oh, no, I have my handy copy of the Code of Canon Law.
I actually don't own a copy of the Code of Canon Law.
There will come a time when you don't say that either.
Yeah, that's right. I have Canon Law 222, which states, the Christian faithful are obliged to assist with the needs of the Church so that the Church has what is necessary for divine worship, for the works of the apostolate and of charity, and for the decent support of ministers. Where does this tithing come from then?
I'm fuzzy on where in the Old Testament it came from, but this is like back from the Mosaic Law. If you had to give the first fruits of your crops as a sign that you trusted in God and that you're ultimately all the goods that you have are from God. So if you're returning them to Him, that's just a sign that you recognize where they came from in the first place.
I would say, I mean, I'm going to go out on a limb. This is not my, like, number one topic or anything, but I'm going to say even from the very first chapter of Genesis, you almost have the foundation of the idea of tithing in that you have the Sabbath, right?
Mm-hmm.
You have this time that's supposed to be set aside for God. And if we set aside time for God, why wouldn't we set aside a portion of everything else?
Time is money, right?
Right. And then the 10% thing, I think that was more set later on.
Genesis,
to provide for the Levites, right?
Well, yeah, but even in Genesis 14, Abraham gives a tenth of his stuff to Melchizedek after Melchizedek offers
the
sacrifice.
Sure. Okay.
And then, yeah, there's a bunch of, in like Deuteronomy, Numbers, and Leviticus, they talk about the actual figures of, you know, 10% to provide for the Levites, the priests and such.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's worth talking about whether those... So it seems like there's two motivations there. The one is the practical motivation, mm-hmm. right? I mean, you need people to tithe so you can keep the power on in the building, right? I mean, seriously, it's not like they're going to...
And sometimes it shuts off anyway.
I do think sometimes people think that the buildings just stay open by some sort of miracle, right? and it is different in different countries. But in the United States, I mean, you pay a power bill just like any other operation does. Nobody gives you anything for free, right? So paying power bill and supplies and personnel and all that other kind of stuff, that's what people have to give money to. And that's in order to have those things there. We have to have money. That's a very practical reason. But I think there's another reason why tithing is important. And I think that's why it's more established in Scripture. And that is tithing is actually good for us. Right? It's necessary for us.
Well, the point you made that tithing is good for us, we talk about kind of... People like to bash the Catholic Church and think, oh, they have all these rules. It's like, well, it's not rules. It's like you can't do this or you have to do this just for the sake of being rules. It's rules against certain things because... They're good for us. Like yeah. God doesn't hate sin because you know you just because you I told you can't do that. Like God hates mm-hmm. sin because He knows it's bad for you, and doesn't He loves you and doesn't yeah. want you to, you know, do things that are bad for yourself. And so, the point that tithing mm-hmm. is good for you is one to make because people think, you know, oh, I just have to, you know, give my money so the church can run, or they pass around this plate every week at church and I give money so I don't look like the cheapskate that doesn't give money or something like that. But
what's interesting what you say about rules, you know, people, we almost apply this different standard to the church and to morality than we do to other areas of our life. So if you were going to go skiing for the first time in your life, and let's say you decide that you're not interested in the advice that anybody has to give you about skiing, right? And so you say to yourself, I'm just going to figure this out myself because, I mean, how hard can it be, really? And so you go to the ski store and the person's trying to convince you that you should get this and this and this and whatever, but you know better, right? So,
you're an engineer. So
yeah, you're an engineer or whatever, you know better. So you're going to go and you're going to get whatever you want. And then somebody suggests to you that if you've never skied before, maybe you ought not to take on the Olympic run. But you say to yourself, no, I mean, I don't want to take on the bunny slope. Who wants to do that? It's not very fun. You look at the thing and it's like, it's not even a hill. And so you say to yourself, no, I'm going to start on something more advanced. You have no idea how to ski. You don't have your ski properly locked into your boot. You don't have the right equipment. Maybe you didn't rent poles. You thought to yourself, oh, I don't need poles, right? And now you start down the Olympic slope. Like, what do you think is going to happen?
It's all downhill.
You're going to fall
there.
And break your leg, right? Right off the bat, you're going to fall and break your leg. That, unless you happen to have a lot of powder on the ground,
yeah,
you're going to fall and break your leg. Right off the bat. Now, you could say that there are rules to skiing, right? There are these kind of rules involved in how one does this. It's not to even mention form, right?
Uh-huh.
This is how you avoid fatal accidents.
Exactly, right? But there are things that you have to do when you're skiing to avoid dying, right?
So when you go to Colorado next, remember this.
Yeah.
The same thing happens when in our moral life. There are things we have to do to avoid dying, right? There's things we have to do to avoid our soul dying. And then the rest of it, in terms of how to do things the best way, you can consider it like best practices. Like, who doesn't want to sit down and listen to somebody like Steve Jobs, although he's dead now, but who doesn't want to listen to Steve Jobs on technological entrepreneurship? Who else would you rather listen to, right? What guy doesn't want to listen to the guy who's probably done the greatest job in history with that? Talk about how to do it, right? You all want to... Now, maybe you don't adopt his ideas, but you don't get offended at him because he says, well, this is how we do this. Because you look and you say, well, this is a man who's been successful at this. But you take the subject matter and change it into morality, and people apply an entirely new set of standards, right? And so in the same way that there are many Catholics who say that the Catholic Church should stay out of my bedroom, there are other people who say
stay out
the
of my
Catholic
wallet.
Church ought to stay out of my wallet, right? It's the same. It's basically the same attitude, right? This is an area of my life that I'm not prepared to submit to Jesus Christ.
It's funny how you say that. In the moral life, people apply a different set of standards. When I was a like a young teenager and starting to get curious about the faith, I think kind of the first intellectual step in my conversion was, you know, I don't like all the things the Catholic Church has to say, but dang, their arguments are airtight. And so that was, eventually I came to appreciate that, like, I really like Jennifer Fulweiler. She's a Catholic speaker. She says that the Catholic Church has the owner's manual to the human soul. And I came to appreciate the rules as, like, not just inconvenient truths, but actually truths that were beautiful.
And again, if the Catholic Church has the owner's manual for the soul, the biggest chapter is on money. I mean, it's a big deal, right? It's a big deal. The root of all evil is the love of money, right? Love of money is the root of all evil.
Something like that.
Isn't that one of those? I don't have a Bible in front of me, but that's one of those passages. There's tons of passages in the New Testament where Jesus talks about this. I mean, even things as far as like the rich young man, right? He comes and he says, "What must I do to inherit eternal life? Keep the commandments."
Right.
And then the rich young man wants something more. He says, "Well, I already do that. What else should I do?" Mm-hmm. And Jesus looked at him, and he loved him, and he said, "All right, if you want to be my disciple, leave everything behind, come follow me." And the guy went away sad because he had many possessions. He didn't want to leave behind his possessions. And that's a basic attitude of so many people. And I find it doesn't change, right? My experience is that someone who won't tithe when they're making $20,000 a year won't tithe when they're making $2 million a year. Or if they do, they'll never tithe to the level that is suggested in the Bible. Because there's always something you can use your money for, right? There's always something. But it's interesting. So I'm sorry, I'm taking this over and I'm not sorry.
Well, it's all right.
Anthony has all this stuff prepared.
Oh, yeah. And in my extensive preparation for this podcast, Father Josh gave me this book called Gross National Happiness.
By Arthur Brooks. He's an economist. And he's now the head of the American Enterprise Institute, but at the time, I believe he was a teacher at a university somewhere out in the teaching economics.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, he gave me this chapter to read called The Secret to Buying Happiness, which we always say money can't buy happiness, but apparently, according to Mr. Brooks, you can. But the gist of the chapter is he talks about how people that give to charity or do volunteer work are generally more happy than people who don't. And he goes through a bunch of statistics about, you know, why it's not just, there's more than just a correlation here that people who weren't happy and then they ran some experiments and had them do charity work and stuff, they became more happy. And then he kind of closes the chapter talking about religious gifts to charity, that those are who are religious tend to give more than those who aren't and tend to donate more of their time as well.
And donate more of their blood.
More of their blood, apparently, yes. He talks about, he brings up giving blood a lot as a simple way to give to charity, and that Americans are exceptional at, apparently.
So the idea behind this book, which I remember when I read it thinking, we need more books like this. Okay. The idea behind this book is that it is a book written by an economist who is a faithful Catholic, but it's not written because he's a faithful Catholic. I mean, it's not written two faithful Catholics. It's not like it's proposing to the world that aside from what the teachings of the faith suggest, this is actually the kind of thing that makes people happy. And this one chapter talks about money, but it's funny if you read the whole book, you realize that like the Christian life that is proposed by Jesus Christ in the gospel is actually what makes people happy. And they report that the closer they live to this life, the happier they are. Right. Mm-hmm. And money's a big aspect of that, right? When we have a level of detachment with our money, that we are prepared to give it up freely and joyfully in support of something we believe in, it changes our entire approach to things. I remember reading a book one time talked about the widow's mite and how even charity can even change our basic understanding of circumstances in which we find ourselves in kind of a level of misery, right? So the widow's mite, right? So this is the widow who comes, and, you know, the rich people are coming and they're giving these big tithes to the temple. And the widow comes and she gives this one tiny little coin that's worth almost nothing. But then Jesus identifies it like, yeah, but this is all she has. Right?
No, it's funny because that kind of story seems exotic if you've grown up in an American church. But I remember seeing that going to church in Mexico with my family. And even in, like, suburban, well-to-do churches, there are always poor people outside. And they come in for Mass just like everybody else. And I saw this very poor little old woman put in, like, maybe, like, 2 pesos. And I remember, I can't remember how young I was, but I remember being really moved by that and seeing, like, she's exactly like the woman in the Gospels.
And she comes in and she gives this little, I mean, 2 pesos is not worth a lot of money.
No.
But you come in and you give that bit. And the interesting thing I read about in this little reflection was, aside from the fact that the woman's being generous with God, right? The next thing that the woman does, she takes her situation of poverty from being a situation of being a victim to being a situation of choice. Because while I might be poor against my will, I'm now this poor as an act of my will, right? So now I've kind of freely chosen this particular level of poverty because I've given away something that I previously had. And I mean, anecdotally, right? I don't have like big data to talk about this, but anecdotally, as a priest and talking to my other priest friends, the parishes that tend to be the poorest tend to be the most generous parishes. I mean, it's interesting. It's like people who have less tend to give more than people that have a lot. I mean, because the problem is we get caught in that materialist cycle.
Yeah. You have a financial inertia. As your bank account grows, your inertia grows.
Exactly. And it gets hard. It gets hard to give away the money. And if I haven't gotten used to giving away $100 gifts, when later on in my life I have a lot more money, it gets a lot harder. If I've not been writing the $100 checks, it gets really hard to write a $10,000 check or a $100,000 check. And that could be 10%, right? Mm-hmm. It's amazing how that kind of thing happens to people. There's no amount of money that will ever satisfy our greed for money. No amount that will ever satisfy it. And people make all kinds of excuses for why they ought not to give, or why they ought not to give at the level that is suggested by the Bible, right? 10%. Mm-hmm. People give all kinds of reasons. I rarely hear a good one. Every once in a while you hear a good one, but I rarely hear one.
The funny thing is, like, when you're right before you decide to give, it's like really tough, but after it's done, like you're fine. Like you think it's going to be some terribly painful experience, but 2 weeks later, you probably don't even remember that.
And you're much more invested. I mean, people who give in their parishes, they end up feeling like they're invested in their parish, right? The people who give in their parish are much less likely to complain about things not going the way they want them to. They're the ones who they've kind of bought into the fact that this is my family. And this is the way it works, right? And we're not all perfect. But the consumer mentality that so many people bring to church, that is, I'm here to consume something. I'm here for you to entertain me. You're going to entertain me with the music. You're going to entertain me with the room. I want it to be pretty and beautiful and all those kind of things. And comfortable. Very important for it to be comfortable. You're going to entertain me with the homily or the sermon. And if those things aren't good, then I'm going to complain and not going to come back, right? These are people who are approaching worship with a consumer mentality. Now, over time, if those things are bad, right, we ought to be trying to improve them. And I'm not saying we ought not to improve those things. But that consumer mentality, that's somebody who also is never going to be fully bought in.
You know, I brought tithing up with my parents, and I had a kind of uncomfortable conversation with them. But I kind of walked my parents through the same thought process that I had when I started feeling a pricking at my conscience that, like, oh, you had your, like, first real job and you haven't tithed any of it. And I was thinking, you know, like, God has given me everything, and, like, being generous means giving more than what's due. But how could I ever give God more than what's due? Whatever I give God, I can only give him injustice. I can't even say I'm being generous with God. So how much more of an injustice would it be if I never gave this back to God? And then it's like, ouch. Like, then you know you have to do it.
And then the other thing, too, is a lot of people, they only want to give from their abundance. We're back to the widow's mite,
yeah,
right?
Exactly.
They only want to give from their abundance. So they say to themselves, and this even happens with really wealthy people who are giving you big gifts, right? They say to themselves, well, my lifestyle requires this amount of money. And I make this amount of money plus 20%. So I'll give away some of that extra 20%, right? Now, that could be a huge amount of money. That could be a huge number, right? So let's say somebody's lifestyle requires $300,000 a year to live. That's a pretty nice lifestyle, right? Mm-hmm. But they make a million, right? So they got 700 grand extra each year. They could give away, you know, 50 grand of that, right? And you get a $50,000 check and you think, wow, right, that's a big donation. That's huge. It's very generous. We're very happy about it. But in reality, right, the person is not giving at a level that requires them to change anything about their life. And I think that's a very important element of charity that we ought not to miss. And that is that the giving that we're called to give, sacrificial giving, is supposed to, in fact, be sacrificial, right? Mm-hmm. It's something that we ought to have to change something in our life as a result of our giving.
Yeah, I was going to mention that, too, because I think there's a difference, for at least for some people, than what he mentions in this chapter as, you know, charity work and volunteering, than to what people do at, you know, Sunday Mass every week, where they drop a check in a plate. They don't get the same joy out of that, I think, than because it becomes a duty, and then it's easier for something to give up, I guess, like that. And I'm St. Paul talking about this in Corinthians chapter 9. He says, the point is this: he who sows sparingly will also reap sparingly, and he who sows bountifully will also reap bountifully. Each one must do as he has made up his mind, not reluctantly or under compulsion, for God loves a cheerful giver, and God is able to provide you with every blessing in abundance, so that you may always have enough of everything and may provide in abundance for every good work. So I guess demonstrating the fact to people is difficult, that this kind of cheerful giving is, or giving in itself will make you cheerful, or giving in a way that's, like you said, sacrificial, that makes you change your lifestyle, is a better way to fulfill your obligation than to just, okay, I only have to give 10%, so that's all I'm going to give.
Yeah. So maybe we should talk about some practicalities of giving. And I mean, I can talk about my experience and some other things, but I definitely think it's a thing that probably not a whole lot of people listening to this podcast, but it's a thing that people are resistant and reluctant to do, and that is to support their parish.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, parishes need money. I mean, on average, Catholics give 1% of their income to charity. Protestants give 2%. Right? And so, I mean, but look at the difference, right? If you drive around, right, you see these Protestant churches that are these humongous, enormous, brand new structures. Mm-hmm. Like, the difference between 1% and 2% is enormous, right?
Right.
But neither of those is where it's supposed to be from the standpoint of how God sees it, right? But number one, we got to support our parish. You got to support the place that you're going to Mass. And that should be something that you do on a regular basis, whether you do it weekly. Maybe somebody says, I'm not going to do it weekly. Like, for instance, I give money to the Catholic Center here, but I give it monthly just because that seems to work. That's easier for me. I don't have to keep up with it as much. Yearly is a little too much because I hate seeing, like, the ding. It gets me a little panicky when I see the big ding in the bank account. But monthly is okay, right? And I kind of budget it into what I'm doing and this, that, and the other.
I have to rip off the Band-Aid and do it yearly.
Well, and I think that's fine. So I'll talk about that, too. So what I do is, well, let's talk about something else. So when we're giving money, it is very, very important that we be intentional in our giving. I cannot encourage people enough to keep your money in your pocket when you walk by somebody who's collecting money on the side of the road for some cause that you've never heard of, you don't know anything about, you can't verify whether the person is collecting for that reason. And this is a big kind of fraud that's going on right now, at least in the state of Georgia, is people that come up and they have these buckets that they're collecting for something or other on the side of the road, and that's not going on at all. That's illegal, right? Mm-hmm. Those people are just pocketing that money, right? But people give money to it because they think, oh, well, I'm supporting this band going to whatever, I'm supporting this group, or I'm doing whatever. don't give those little bits and pieces to people on the side of the road. Now, charities, people who run charities get really ticked off when you hear people like me say that, because they count on people doing that. Or like when I go to Publix now, every single time I go to the grocery store, when I go to check out, they say, would you like to donate a dollar to blank? Special and it seems Olympics. Like the charity changes every month.
It does, I think.
And every single time I tell them no. Because first of all, if I wanted to support the charity, I'm going to do it in such a way that I can take it off my taxes, right? So I'm going to write them a check, right? Number one. Number two, I don't know anything about these charities. Like when somebody asks you, hey, would you like to support the RCW Fund for Women? Right? It's like, well, what does that mean? I mean, I don't know what that is. What do they do with their money? Like, you have an obligation. It's your money. You have an obligation to make sure the money is going to be spent well. Now, you can't control it 100% once you've given it away, but you ought to have a reasonable expectation that the money is going to be spent well. In the same way that if you're walking by a homeless person on the street and he's asking for drug money, you probably ought not to give it to him. If he's asking for money for food and you have a reasonable expectation, you're not going to be 100%, but you got a reasonable expectation that the guy's going to get food with the money, then fine, right? But, I mean, obviously, if you're going to directly support something that's not good, you don't want to be doing that, right? Well, the problem is you have no idea what some of these charities are doing. So I'm not a fan of any of that kind of dissipated giving, right? A dollar here, $10 here, people doing this, guy and the other. Do your research and give to causes that really matter. There are charities proliferating in this world. More and more and more and more charities are operating. And most of them are not worth your money. They're not worth your time. They're not worth your money. They're not worth any of that stuff. When you go and you look into charities, so many of them have overhead expenses that would blow your mind.
It's just some a big of the slush
biggest,
fund.
Yeah, some of the biggest charities in the United States. Ones that people give to out of their checks. They get withheld from their check at work. Right. Some of those groups, they have like 90% overhead rates. So you're giving 10 cents out of every dollar is actually going to any kind of work. And the rest of it's just going to pay for the organization. Right? I mean, that's crazy. It's crazy. It should not work that way. So first of all, I'm not a fan of dissipated giving. I'm a fan of really intentional giving. So in order to do that, though, it's still important to set aside the money. So what I do is I have a savings account that is dedicated purely to charity. So what I do is directly out of my bank or directly out of my check each month, a certain amount of money goes into that savings account, right? And then I give a certain amount of money to Georgia Tech each month. And then that other money, now when different kind of requests come in and people say, hey, well, I want you to support this or that or whatever, then I look at it, I pray about it, I say, is this something that I want to put whatever limited funds I have towards. By virtue of the fact that I've already kind of given it away, it's already sitting in this account. I mean, from a tax standpoint, I haven't given it away, but that money now, I know it's not mine. It's free and it's available to a charity that I see fit. And there's never that much in there, you know, but I mean, in fact, I just wiped it out recently, giving to an organization. But that gives me the ability to make very careful and intentional decisions on who I support. But it is my opinion, and I don't think you're going to find any Catholic that knows anything about theology or whatever. It is my opinion that support of your parish is non-negotiable. Mm-hmm. Like, you need to be supporting your parish. And if you're not doing that, then if you're not getting the priests that you think you deserve, if you're not getting the music that you think you deserve, if you're not getting the building that you think you deserve, if you're not getting whatever it is that you think the church owes you, if you're not willing to pay for it, you don't deserve anything. And that's just the way it works. Listen, most priests are very dedicated, and they will continue serving you even if they didn't get paid anything. If we had to go and beg for food on the side of the road, we'd still do what we're supposed to do. But the fact is, most people in parishes get paid. They're underpaid for what they do. And we still have to raise money for them. And then you have organizations like Georgia Tech, right? We're doing great work. And we get no support at all except for what our alumni or our parents or other people who appreciate what we're doing give us. Like, we have no source of income other than that. We're not a parish, so we don't have, like, regular people coming and giving money. So it's important for us to ask ourselves, where should my money go? How should I use it? What would be the most impactful use of my money? And give it to those places. And that's why this dissipated giving is a bad idea. you know, a dollar every time I buy something at Publix, or a dollar every time you buy something. I mean, there's tons of places these days asking you that.
Mm-hmm.
And so anyway, that I think, and then I also think we really ought to aim for 10% of our post-tax income. You can't control how much the government is going to tax your income. So your free cash, what you have after you've paid your taxes, we really ought to aim to give 10% of that away.
If we're talking about practicality, though, for, I guess, the majority of our listeners are probably college students, mm-hmm. and college students are poor.
Yep.
Like, how can they practically support their parish or their Newman Center or whatever in
well,
a way
so,
without...
You know, a college student who's borrowing money in order to be in school obviously ought not to be tithing at all,
yeah.
right? You're not going to borrow money to tithe. That's mm-hmm. crazy, right? That's not your money. You're borrowing it. But when you start working, that's when you tithe.
Okay.
And it's important, like, for college students to remember that what you received when you were in college, if it was worthwhile, right, what you received when you were in college, somebody else was paying for it, right, while you were there. And you ought to pay for it while somebody else is there, right?
Right.
And then in parishes, it's just a matter of income. But mm-hmm. the thing is, it's not like I say, I'm not going to tithe because I got to pay off my debt. No, it doesn't work that way, right? So now I've got, you know, $100,000 of school debt, and so then I'm thinking, well, gosh, I just got to get all this debt paid off. Well, no, that's like part of the life that we chose, but your income still is something you should tithe from. Then after that, I say, this is what I've got left, and I have to take care of my debt service, I got to take care of my family, I got to take care of buying a car and a house and doing whatever it is that I mm-hmm. do from that money. The people that do that, there are secular studies that prove that they're the happiest people, right? And religious studies that definitely show it. They are the happiest people. Now, do they have to give something up? Sure they do. You know, and I tell college students sometimes, it's good for us, from a tithing standpoint, for college students, to just ask themselves the question, do I, for instance, in a week... spend more money on booze than I do giving money away, right? And if I can answer that question, yes. Yeah, I spend $28 a week on booze, but I give nothing away. Like, well, okay. So that $28, I would count that as free cash. If you're going to choose to use it on something like alcohol, that's free cash. And that kind of money ought to be tithed on. You know, even if you're borrowing it, if you're going to borrow it to buy alcohol,
why not borrow it?
Exactly,
right.
Exactly, because that's now kind of free money. You've chosen to make it free money, but it's just one of those things. It's a good thing for us to ask ourselves. And I know people. I mean, it's one of those things. Like once you're a priest, right? You can look in the system. We have the system. You keep track of everybody, right, in the parish. You can look up what people give, right?
Is there a blacklist?
No, it's not like that. But you can see a history of their giving, right? You can see people who spend a ton of money on all kinds of stuff, right? They're driving the nicest, newest cars, live in big houses, sending their kids to Catholic school, which sometimes people think that that's like tithing. But you're only paying for 75% of your kid's education. You're actually getting supplemented. You're taking from
it's
the
subsidized,
church.
Yeah.
You're actually taking from the church, not giving to it with Catholic school, right? But you look at the life they live, and you're basically getting the price of two lattes a month, or two lattes a week from them, right? They're giving you $10 a week, and yet they're spending all this other money other places. And you think to yourself, wow, like, there's something that's upside down about that. And I know some of you that are listening, you may think to yourself, I'm talking about you, and maybe I am, I don't know. But again, the point isn't to make people feel bad. The point is to say that this is the life that God's called us to, and we have to adjust our lives to conform to what He has asked, not to adjust His request to how we want to live, right? That's the basic problem that we all encounter, right? It's the basic problem of morality. I don't want to change, so I'm just going to reject this. I mean, we talk about cafeteria Catholicism, right?
Yeah.
You've heard that phrase before, right?
Oh, yeah.
And
you just serve yourself a little thing, a little bit of what you like, and
yep.
not, you don't serve yourself of what you don't.
Leave
and
what
you don't
want,
pay for
take
it now,
what you
so.
Want. And the thing is, a lot of times, there are cafeteria Catholics who accuse other people of being cafeteria Catholics right? I'm a cafeteria Catholic with respect to money, but I'm not with respect to pro-life stuff, right? Pro-life stuff, I'm 100% in, but I won't give my money the way I'm supposed to, right? So we're not supposed to be that way, right? Mm-hmm. Our Lord proposes for us a way to live well, and the way we live well is via being generous and free with our money, right? To let go of it cheerfully, but responsibly to organizations that deserve it, that kind of thing. But to make that a part of our life and to make sure we teach our kids that this is the way we're supposed to live, right? It amazes me sometimes here how many students will refuse to give us their parents' information.
Really?
Right? Oh, there's tons. Oh, yeah. There's 75% of students won't give us their parents' information.
I was just looking over the sheet the other day, reorganizing.
And it's like they don't seem to understand, like, this building doesn't, our budget's $400,000 a year, maybe a little more than that. Our budget's $400,000 a year. We have to raise that from parents and from alumni, right?
Because the students aren't paying for it.
Because, I mean, our collection's like $300 a week or something. It's terrible, right? from students. Sometimes we have some alumni that give in the regular collection. But it amazes me the number of students that won't even give us their contact information for their parents because they don't want us asking their parents for money. I'm like, but you have no problem coming to Mass or coming to community dinners or doing all that kind of stuff. And, in fact, you want more than what we're giving you, but you won't let us send an annual report once a year in the most kind of non-committal way possible to your parents so that they can freely choose whether they wish to give us money or not, right? It's not like we call people. We're not hounding people, you know? But it's amazing, like, how resistant people are. The more rational with money than they are with almost anything else. And I think that's why it's so dangerous. That's why Jesus talked about it so much, right? It's why he talked about it so much, because it'll keep us from heaven, right? It's like the story of the camel. What is it that's easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than for a rich man to enter into heaven? And the thing that biblical scholars say is that the eye of the needle was this rock formation outside of Jerusalem. In order to get a camel to go through it, you had to take everything that the camel was carrying off of the camel, and then the camel had to get down on its knees and basically be pushed and pulled through this rock formation in order to get through, right? So the whole idea is not that a rich man can't get to heaven. The idea is that, I mean, it's going to be like trying to get this camel through the eye of a needle, right? Everything's got to go. And it turns out in the end, you're still going to need the help of people. They're going to have to push you, and they're going to have to pull you through. Right?
And they're going to have to give obnoxious homilies.
Exactly. And you can spit at them just like camels do, and that's fine. You know? But it's amazing. Like, if we're not willing to do that, then our money, if we're not careful, our money will pull us right down to hell, which is not good. Yeah. Right? Well, I think that's a good overview, at least, of the topic. And if you have any questions or comments or complaints, you can direct them to Anthony.
That's right.
He loves complaints. The email is podcast@gtcatholic.org. And thank you for listening, and God bless.